Hello and welcome to the Green Room at Furnitubes. I'm your host, Catherine Barrett, and we're here every month with a new episode. Join us for industry musings, interviews and discussions exploring all things landscape architecture, street furniture and urban design. This month, we're joined by Mike Wildrink of the Outdoor Deck Company for an eye-opening discussion on how fire safety regulations have changed over the past 2 years, the impact on our industry and what it means for landscape architects. We also touch on how regulations have influenced our approach to design and the way we use materials. Mike oversees three brands and companies. The most established or the well-known is the Outdoor Deck Company, which focuses on external timber decking. Mike also is the only authorised UK distributor of Bouzon products in the UK. And finally, Alfresco flooring, which Mike set up in the response to the requirements for Class A fire-regulated external flooring systems. So that's what Alfresco flooring focuses on, fire-rated external flooring systems. And Furnitubes have worked with Mike and each of these companies on a number of projects successfully over the last couple of years, and we wanted to invite Mike in to talk more about fire regulations or fire safety regulations and how they've changed over the last couple of years.
Can you summarise the state of fire regulations in our industry and how they've changed over the last couple of years?
The major change was the update to the building regulations in 2019. In particular, approved document B was amended to say that the external walls, which includes specified attachments, of residential buildings over 18 metres has to be constructed with non-combustible materials. But since then, the Fire Safety Act has been updated to clarify responsibilities for fire safety in multiple occupancy buildings, and now includes hotels. Last year, British Standards released their guide to the design of balconies and terraces. They recommend that fire regulations are applied to all buildings over 11 metres in height. Having said that, I think the industry takes a view, particularly with architects and due diligence on their part, that they tend to look at fire regs starting from the first floor up for all new build.
Yeah, we've seen that as well. So what brought about these changes, and then what are the knock-on effects for our industry, and who are the key players in passing these regulations?
Over the years, there have been several tragedies involving high-rise blocks, but obviously the catalyst for change has been the Grenfell disaster in 2017, which we all recognise, and there's been several since then. The inquiry started the very next day after Grenfell following the fire. Dame Judith Hackett was appointed to lead a review, which resulted in the building of a Safer Future report, or informally the Hackett report. She and her team identified a cultural issue in the construction industry, which she called a race to the bottom, which is just a mixture of ignorance, indifference, and a lack of best practice, particularly from main contractors. It's never from an architectural practice. It tends to be main contractors that try to value engineer even fire-rated materials, which makes a bit of a nonsense of the whole approach to start with. So what the industry needs from there on is for something a little bit more concrete and black and white and transparent about what applications, how they are approached and what needs to be fire rated and what isn't, but no division between A or B or C or D. They just have one that is fire rated for residential buildings.
Right. So rather than conflicting European and British standards, have one set of guidelines.
There's one set of guidelines, but we've left the EU. So there is a bit of a difference now that we have to now start again, or British Standards does, but having its own application for the UK market. Europe has a different approach and a different rating system than we have here. Having said that, there's one thing that is common, which is B roof. Now, if I may explain what that means, there's two types of fire-rated applications. One is for balconies. Ironically, architects, a lot of them, do not understand this difference. But with balconies, the components have to be fire-rated. So all the components to make up a balcony or system has to be compliant to A1, A2. If it's a roof terrace, it's different because the application for that is called B Roof T4. People don't even know what the T4 is. The T4 is representative of the UK, whereas T1 is Belgium, T2 is France, for example. But the B Roof is trying to have a generic tested system, which means that every component within the system, for example, on a roof, which would be For example, waterproof membrane, insulation, if that's on top, pedestals or support mechanism, and final substrate being decking or paving, whatever the product may be, all have to comply and be tested as a complete system, which makes a bit of a nonsense of it. But when you're testing for B-Roof T4, it's an expensive approach, and it takes 6 months to try and get a slot to have this tested. That means that every application or any change to it must be tested again as a system.
Right. So if you change one element of the system, it needs to be retested, versus if each element is tested individually, yep, you know that you can put them together.
Correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that's why balconies are a lot easier.
Yep. But
roof terraces, it's a hard and fast rule, which makes a bit of a nonsense of it, really, because
right,
it's an expensive process. And obviously, main contractors in particular, or clients ultimately, don't want to have to pay for that. So right, they will find any loophole they can currently to get away from it.
Thank you for explaining B-Roof T4. You've mentioned A1, A2. What did those mean? And what are the regulations surrounding A1, A2 and below A1 and A2?
Right. Well, A1, A2 are both compliant. And what the difference is, for example, A1 products that are naturally A1 would be steel, aluminium, porcelain, natural stone, concrete. Ultimately, they are the products. Now, if there's any change to those products, for example, if you take aluminium and you have it powder coated, that will have to be tested because of the smoke content. And once it is passed, it's regarded as an A2 product because it's got a smoke content.
Yeah.
If it's not powder coated, it doesn't have a smoke content, so therefore it's A1 naturally.
How has Alfresco Flooring, Bouzon, the Outdoor Deck Company, how have you responded to these changes? And how are you working with landscape architects to help them understand the changes?
We're at the forefront of these changes, and we're the first to really orchestrate a movement in that field, particularly with CPDs to architects. They're informative, very generic, but it's just an understanding or a good educational level for them to understand the differences of what fire ratings apply to their building. And also main contractors, they need to be enlightened about this as well. But equally, to give them a menu of products of choice that will be fit for purpose for that site.
Right. So it's understanding the requirements, but then also saying, and here are all the solutions that can help you.
Correct.
With those requirements.
Absolutely. And there's not like before fire ratings come into play, there was a much bigger menu. Yes, it is a small menu, but that is increasing by adapting certain products to make them fire rated. We're getting there, but we have quite a few systems that will address a lot of the visual elements that they're trying to achieve on site.
Right. And you were telling me just earlier about some new aluminium decking that's got some fantastic coating to it to make it look just like timber.
Exactly. I mean, there's two key products that are common in the market that are fire rated. One is porcelain. Now, porcelain used to be quite a limited menu of product, but now different sizes, different looks and finishes on porcelain. You can achieve pretty much anything on it. There's thousands of different applications that you can apply porcelain to. But there is a big change in the aluminium deck board market. Most of the decking that you'll see that's available in the marketplace or on sites are quite bland because they're just powder coated to a very industrial color. They look too commercial in a domestic scene. It doesn't quite work. So we've come up with new technologies to produce decking and cladding and soffits material that is all aluminium, but powder coated to look just like timber. In fact, you'd be hard pressed to tell the difference initially once you see the product. It's so realistic.
So the important thing for us and for the landscape architects and for the contract community to understand is understand the materials, understand there are regulations, but as long as they follow really the advice of the companies they're working with, particularly the outdoor deck, in terms of understanding what ratings are required for the building.
Correct. That's yes, right. Looking at product and having a choice of product is one thing that gives you a menu. And then the choice of product will be site specific in terms of budget. That helps to know, to understand. But the key thing that architects or main contractors don't quite get, I think they're learning more and more as we go on, but the two key or fundamental people that could make a choice on fire rating that has to be applied to new build is a fire officer, and the second person is building control. Now, either one of those two have the power to sign off products that comply or they're satisfied to be installed on site. So ultimately, it should always go past a fire officer for verification and building control.
Right.
And most people tend to do that now.
And you can be reassured that all the products that you have meet those compliance requirements and regulation requirements.
Yeah, now that's important too, because there are products in the marketplace that we know that do not comply. It could be aluminium decking we've seen, where obviously aluminium is A1, but if it's not powder coated correctly or the paint content has too high a smoke level, then it doesn't comply. It's all about the quality of source and the integrity of the company that's powder coating in the first instance. Right. So we do see some products on the market that we know that do not comply, and they don't have any test certification for it. Everything we get involved with is fully compliant. We have to, and we're very diligent about this, about having every single product tested from a loading perspective as well as a fire rating.
So a landscape architect's looking for test compliance, basically, that the products that they're specifying have been tested.
Yeah, I think that's imperative, because when it comes to terms of insurance for a building, they need to have the certification in their own documents for it to comply in the first instance. It's too late down the line after an installation's taking place to try and have that verified. So we do find that there are companies in the UK that are supplying so-called fire-rated materials, but there's no certification, and they're not being asked for it either by our landscape architects in particular. Mm. I think they should have a Q&A to every supplier of how they do comply with materials and certification and testing for it.
Right.
The companies that do the testing, as BRE is one, obviously, in the UK, and is Warrington Fire, very well respected. They are the people that would give accurate, solid certification that's compliant for the UK market. There are some abroad in the Far East, for example. We know that they're not tested, but they are doctored documents to get over this issue about compliance, even though it's not compliant.
You obviously work very closely with landscape architects in terms of specifications. Are you seeing a pickup now of an understanding what's needed, or are you finding you're still at the very early stages needing to get involved in terms of, have you thought about this? What type of materials can be used?
I think once we understand the plan of what they're trying to achieve, that's the starting point in an ideal world of what they want it to look like and material choice. Mm. From that, we can then dissect elements of it to say what we think they should observe in terms of fire rating control. For the obvious, I mean, for example, you could have a roof terrace that may not need full application because of a commercial environment, but simple things like, is there a fire exit involved? If there's a fire exit, it does need to comply. Mm-hmm. So when we look at plans and specification of what they intend to do, we can give them really good instruction in a generic way of what their choice should be to comply for that build.
And we've worked together on a few projects as well, and we've seen where your pedestals and flooring has combined with our steel retaining walls with some timber seating as well. So we found that combination works really well with small amounts of timber.
It does. If you're looking at timber that's, for example, a surround on planter units, for example, that will always comply because it's not big enough to be an issue. That's the first thing. Secondly, with seating, it's not the flooring. It's the flooring and what's below it that need to be compliant. Because fire normally comes from another part of a building, like cladding, for example, and will go onto a terrace. With seating or with a planter unit or any timber or composite content, it doesn't comply. It's not a worry point at all. That won't be part and parcel of a B roof or a 1A2 compliant.
It's the flooring that's the most critical.
Absolutely.
Part, and the cladding.
Cladding and flooring, that's really where this has all come from.
Yeah, which is why your expertise in fire regulations is critical.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll give you an example. There's a lot of pedestals on the market. Again, architects are not aware of this, where the spacer tabs, which are required on a pedestal to separate two pavers, for example, for rainwater outlets, they're plastic. Well, that doesn't comply. Mm. But some companies, looking at the terminology of what's required and calling it a gasket or something similar and getting away with it, well, it's not a gasket because you can see it and it can catch fire. And if it does, it will drip, and that drip value will set fire to insulation, etc. So we're coming across this all the time. And it's a hard slog to try and convert people to understand that is not applicable anymore.
Yeah.
And it never was. You cannot change some of the terminology or interpret it your way.
Right.
It's a hard and fast rule. In fact, the whole industry needs that, where someone like the Hackett Report or the people behind it, or certainly British Standards, come up with one solid fire-related way forward in terms of specification and what products comply. So there's no misinterpretation.
There's no wiggle room.
Well, the wiggle room, all it does is just value engineer sites.
Yep.
But I think that now we're full on several years down the line on fire-related components or fireproof components, they've come down in cost too. So realistically, the value engineering point of view, it doesn't need to exist with fire-rated products like it used to. It's now very affordable.
So to summarize, as a landscape architect, I'm working on a roof terrace. What should I be doing other than calling you straight away? Well, actually, that's probably one of them.
It helps. But I think on a big build, when landscape architects get there instructed for the landscaping package, for example, that has typically come from the architect for the build. If so, they would have already appointed a fire officer or building control. And it's always really worth putting past them, asking them the direct questions, how does fire-rated components comply on this building? Which will then give them a true menu of and a selection of products. And they may be pleasantly surprised that they've got more of a choice that way.
Right.
And if they did it that way, then they've already addressed a lot of the issues rather than carry on and design podiums and roof terraces and to find later on that they have to change it all again.
Right.
So starting right from the outset to get approval from further up the chain for them to sign off in terms of what fire ratings are required, then they have a true menu of how to look forward to designing the terraces.
And as a main contractor, what would be your message to main contractors when they're looking at executing these specifications?
I think they have to be true to form in terms of due diligence on their part, because it's very difficult for them, it has been in the past. But in my opinion, fire rated issues are paramount. And it's something that they shouldn't dice with. Some of them still do. And it's really frustrating about how they try to get away with it in terms of wiggle room from their part. But if they just looked at their names behind it, and even in the recent fires over the last year, these are big main contractors and house builders that have been caught in these.
Mm.
And had they, first of all, towed the line on fire-rated issues and addressed them then, they wouldn't have these issues.
Yeah.
So I think they're all learning. And I think the risk element has been a lot less than it used to be.
Mm.
These serious main contractors of worth and place in the market, they instantly already address that.
It's a non-negotiable.
It's non-negotiable. Yeah. And they look at it as a way forward and it's site compliant. And that's what they're after. Do bear in mind that there's little things like NHBC, for example. They need to sign off issues on build for warranties to apply.
Right.
And insurances. Now, we're very involved with NHBC. In fact, we work together with them in terms of what products we do and others do that are similar to what we do, how they should comply on a site. For example, I mentioned earlier about some pedestals having plastic spacer tabs. Well, I had a site a couple of days ago, for example, that NHBC refused to accept plastic spacer tabs that had to be A1 rated. So that was refreshing to find that they are listening.
Yeah.
So we do work very closely with them and others and other people in the insulation market. For example, we work very closely with Rockwool and with Foamglass, the two A-rated insulation companies in the marketplace now. So we come up with systems that are applicable to them, and in turn, as a combined system, is applicable to the main contractor.
Yeah, the more that these systems are developed, the more you realise there is a lot of choice, and the focus is on choice within fire-regulated materials.
Absolutely, yes. It's a bit of a strangle in terms of what materials can be used, but if they're adapted properly with new technologies coming out to use those sensibly and being a bit more adventurous with them, you now have a bigger menu to make it look a little bit more desirable rather than too commercial.
Mike, tell us about how you came to creating the Outdoor Deck Company and a little bit about your career prior to decking.
Weirdly, I'm an electrician by trade. I come from New Zealand, and coming from New Zealand, of course, everyone's got a deck somewhere down the line. So coming to the UK, decking wasn't a thing that I didn't see a lot of it. So I remember doing the first deck at my house when I set up the Outdoor Deck Company 30 odd years ago. People didn't really know what I was talking about, because the minute you mentioned decking, they thought of a boat.
Right.
So trying to find a name for the company, I thought we'd better say exactly what it says on the can, being the Outdoor Deck Company. So that's how that came about. So coming from New Zealand, understanding timber, lifestyle, etc. So it was a bit of a gamble, because everyone was very much bricks and mortar in the UK and crazy paving at the time. But that transition has now turned into a huge industry in the UK.
absolutely huge, and our appreciation of being outside has just grown and grown and grown. Pity the weather hasn't responded.
Yeah.
And Mike, if you could put a bench in one spot in the world, where would it be and why?
Well, in New Zealand, we have a beach house. It's around the coast and near Wellington in the North Island. And it's on a little hill. And looking from there across the sea, you see the South Island. And we've had a bench put in there that was, I think it was given to us from the Westpac Stadium in Wellington. Those collapsible, foldable seats that you normally get in a stadium. So we've put a row of those in. So it's bright yellow awesome. Plastic, but that is the go-to place. And that's where we would hang out when we're over there.
I love it. Thank you very much. Right, I promised you a glass of wine.
Yes, thank you very much.
We're off to go and get one.
That's why I'm here.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Catherine, for the invite.